Environment Matters, sponsored by Wuka Period Pants, the reusable menstrual underwear that completely replaces disposables. Find out more at wuka.co.uk and join the revolution.
And a big welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around St Albans and from further afield. Coming up later, we're going to be discussing vegan gardening. But first, Highfield Park, just to the east of St Albans, has got some great events coming up. And Jo Gray, one of the new trustees, is here to tell us more. So, Jo, thank you very much indeed for joining me. Now, you're a local ecologist and you've not long ago been appointed as a trustee at Highfield Park. Now, from the ecological point of view, does the park have anything of particular interest?
Perhaps the most interesting part are our two old orchards, which have tremendous communities of lichens and mosses and liverwort and some really interesting insects associated with them. But there's also a sort of variety of different habitats which you might not necessarily think of as being, you know, typical of an amenity park. So we've got a newly planted native woodlands, we've got some old hedgerows, we've got a pond, so there's a mixture of, as well as the typical amenity park grassland, there's a mixture of habitats and many old trees.
Yeah, quite a variety there then.
Yeah, and it's of a big enough size that it can actually make quite a big difference for wildlife.
There are lots of little corners to it, aren't there? Now, are you hoping to make any changes at the park? Anything to enhance its biodiversity?
Yeah, well, our plan, which I think is what we're going to get into in the discussion, our plan is to increase the level of recording of biodiversity at the park, which will then in turn allow us to make tweaks or maybe larger adjustments to the management plan, which is reviewed on an annual basis. Right. In order to make sure that as much as possible we're doing the things that are going to benefit the wildlife that's there.
Brilliant. So this is a really quite a scientific approach. You're kind of baselining what you're starting with, and then you'll be able to see whether things are getting better.
Scientific, but trying to get the local community involved as much as possible.
Yeah, OK. So you're kicking this off with an event you're holding on the 28th of April. Tell us what that's about.
So this is part of a series of talks and walks that we're going to be running during the summer, aimed at increasing the level of biodiversity recording in the park. But the first one, which is on Sunday, the 28th of April, is going to be introducing people to you know, what is a biological record? What information do you need to capture? Are there websites you need to submit it to? Are there groups you can go to for help or useful online resources or books? So we'll be equipping people who attend with all the information and the tools they need to be able to do it. And it's not nearly as scary as it sounds.
It does sound quite technical. I mean, do you need specialist knowledge?
No, it's just like any other hobby. You just need to make sure that you're collecting a few crucial bits of information for the record you've collected to be valid, and a photo may be useful. Right. But it's just the same as going out for a walk, but you just have a notepad with you or a phone and you take notes as you go.
Okay. Now, you've said wildlife recording. How have you actually specified what kind of wildlife? Will you be focusing on anything particular or is this just, well, anything?
So throughout the summer then we'll be covering some different groups. So we're going to have one talk in May looking at bugs and beetles, and some other insects too. The one in June we'll be looking or giving people an introduction to bird calls and bird songs. There's a lot of birds obviously to be found in the park. We have another one looking at identifying native trees and also looking at the types of animals that feed on them. And then we also have one looking at the different microhabitats within the park, such as dead wood, which can be really important for a whole range of animals. In addition to that, we have three of our ever popular bat nights, which will be taking place around dusk, one in July, one in August and one in September.
So there's lots to look forward to, but the event on the 28th is really going to be the basis, isn't it?
It's not essential that, you know, that you attend that in order to attend the other ones, but it'll be very useful if for someone who's interested in perhaps taking on a new hobby in 2019, looking to do something which actually makes a difference for conservation. We'll have Ian Carl along from the Harts Environmental Record Centre, who's the the expert in the county on this. So it's a good opportunity to learn about this.
So Joe, is this just for is this just for adults?
So some of the we already in previous years, for the last 3 years, we've run mini beach safaris for young children, which are very, very popular events and obviously really important for getting young children engaged with wildlife. But we're aware that there's also a different audience out there. So the events I've been taught, except that the bat nights are for people of all ages. Yeah. The other ones I mentioned, looking at, for instance, bugs and beetles and birdsong, we're aiming those at adults and interested teenagers who are accompanied by adults. So people who are just starting to get into it, and they're pitched at an introductory level.
Right.
So through that and the mini bee safaris that we run, we have something for people of all ages.
Right. Okay. And so these people, do they have to live close to Highfield Park, or could they perhaps be interested in looking at wildlife in somewhere a little bit, perhaps if they lived a bit further away?
No. Yes. Then? We certainly. I mean, one of the park's aims is to have a really lovely place to visit for people not just living immediately around the park, but in the wider area. So yes, we'd be thrilled to have anyone from slightly further afield if they wanted to come along. The park is slightly unusual in a good way, in that we have a really good new education centre that we opened last year. So without wishing to blow our own trumpet, we do think we're in a good position to make a difference, because we have not just the different habitats right on the doorstep as mentioned, but we also have a really nice indoor education centre to back it up with.
Yeah, well, that all sounds brilliant. Do we need to book, or can we just turn up?
Yes, we do. We found a few years ago when we ran a mini beast safari, it was so popular that we perhaps didn't quite have the number of people there to run it properly.
Right.
So we've learned from that and have put a booking system in place. We have a website, which is the URL for which is highfieldparktrust.co.uk.
Yep.
And you can go along to the events page on there, and you can book onto any of the events I talked about, including the mini bee safari. Most of the ones I've mentioned, there's a £4 cost associated with per person, all proceeds of which will go to supporting the park's charitable aims. The first one, which is setting the scene on wildlife recording, that's a free event. That's the one on Sunday, the 28th of April.
Yeah.
And all the daytime ones run from 2 till 4. And the bat nights are obviously around dusk, with the times varying depending on when sunset is. But yes, we do urge people to go on and book, and places are limited. So obviously we recommend booking early to avoid disappointment.
Well, they sound understandably popular. Thank you very much indeed. We hope they go really well.
Thank you.
And I was talking there to Joe Gray, who's one of the trustees at Highfield Park. That sounds great, don't they? Lots to look forward to there. Now, given the enthusiasm with which last week's vegan market was welcomed to St Albans, it won't come as a surprise that vegan gardening is gaining in popularity. I spoke to Chris Thorne, the retail manager at Eightlets Nurseries, to find out more about this growing trend. Chris, thank you for joining me. So, vegan gardening. Now, I believe it's like organic gardening, but without the animal products, things like bone meal and manure. So, how do vegan gardeners ensure that their plants get enough nutrients?
Well, Amanda, there's many ways that they can do that. Green manure is one of the favourites I think they'd be using, or I do use.
Okay, what is green manure?
So, green manure, it's a way of banking the nutrients in the soil. If you were to just let a plant or leave a piece of land fallow and unused, nutrients will leach away. Sow some seed like mustard or clover, and those plants will take up the nutrient and bank it for you.
Okay, so it's sort of like the plants have made the fertiliser for you, is that right?
That's right. I mean, particularly if you take clover, that's got nitrogen-fixing nodules on the roots. So you'll grow your clover, you'll cut it, You can leave it on the surface and let the worms take it back into the soil to enrich the soil, and then the nodules will release the nitrogen into the crops. So you might well follow it with, say, lettuce or cabbage, something which needs nitrogen to grow.
Right.
So this is a part of crop rotation.
So you're not actually using a fertilizer or a product. Instead, you're using plants themselves to feed the next plants.
Okay. Well, isn't that nature's way? I mean, you don't get a piece of land, Mother Nature. Nature will always cover land. We'd call it perhaps weeds growing, but if you can smother those with this green manure, that will stop that.
Okay, yep. As you say, actually, there's nobody sprinkling fertiliser in the natural world, is there? So how about if we're growing things, for instance, tomatoes or things in hanging baskets? Perhaps green manure is not the thing. How about, do you have a product for that?
Well, we do, yes. I mean, we've known MaxiCrop for a while, the seaweed. That's something vegan friendly, if you like.
Yeah.
We've got a new one on the market now, which is really good stuff. Smells like it, but it's a new product from a farmer in Leicestershire, and he's made this from maize, and it's part of what many farmers are doing. They're creating electricity by putting plant material through a digester, giving off methane gas, firing up a lorry engine and generating. So what we have here is the byproduct of that. It does, so you're getting out the end, you're getting lots of lovely fibre, which they're putting in buckets. We're selling that. But more than that, I think, we've got the liquid feed coming out of the system, and that's going to be really good for your plants.
Right, OK, so that's fantastic. So this is a fertiliser which not only does it not come from an artificial source or from an animal source, this is actually coming from a waste source as well.
It's purely plant material. Lots of these digesters, they might be using, if you've got a chicken farm, you might be using that to process your chicken poo, if you will. But that's not what this does. This is just purely from vegetable material.
Right, OK. Now, how about something in place of manure? Would you say the green manure was there, or do you have a sort of a composty type product that you could use in place?
Well, I think if you're in my garden, I just use my own compost. Nothing goes off my garden.
Right.
And out for the collection. It's all used. I've got a shredder, and I put everything through that. And sometime about a year later, I've got some really nice stuff, and I can just spread that on the surface. Did it last autumn, and that's first disappeared now. It's not magic, it's the worms taking it in. And I'm doing very little digging, actually.
Right, OK. Because, of course, once you start digging, then you start hurting the worms, which, again, is quite against the vegan philosophy, isn't it? So why is no digging so good?
Well, there's lots of work been going on. Lots of people in white coats have been paid money to do some research. And they're finding out things like phosphate particularly has its own level in the soil. And if you dig, you'll turn that and move it. And it's not what plants want. For millions of years, they've evolved. And here we are in the last few decades, turning it all upside down, literally. So it's good to do, if you can, do this no digging.
Right.
I think there's a lot in that.
Okay. Well, so it actually sounds as if the kind of gardening which is being called vegan gardening is actually working with nature, and perhaps we can all take a little bit from this.
Yes, indeed. Nature's way. We can learn from nature. And there's a lot that's in the vegan ethos that we could take from, I think. And in the end, who wants to spray their garden with chemicals if there's another way around it?
Yeah, absolutely. So how about, just thinking there, you say it's spraying your gardens. So presumably, if you want to try and have a kinder way of gardening, a more vegan way of gardening, presumably you can't use pesticides. Are there any alternatives there that a vegan could use?
Well, it's funny you should say that, Amanda. We've just taken on a new product where you can make your own chemicals, if you will. And that's sort of making, I suppose we call it a tea.
Right.
And you can use this. It's a bit like a bucket, and it's a 10-litre, 15-litre bucket, something like that. It's got a tap on the bottom. And you put in either things like nettles or comfrey, and you can make a liquid fertiliser from it that way, or which perhaps they've done in allotments for ages. They'd have a tank down the bottom of the allotment. And chop the comfrey up in there. It's a bit smelly.
Right.
This is a nice sealed tank, so it's all done really nicely.
Yeah.
And the beauty of it is you can do another one using lavender, another tea using lavender. and that's going to be a repellent for your insects, the pests. So you just spray that on your crops and the ones you want to save, and then the aphids, the green fly, can go somewhere else and feed on plants you don't need to worry about.
Fantastic. So that, rather than killing the aphids or other insects, instead of just repelling them, a much kinder way of doing it.
Yes, and I think, you know, that's the vegan way of doing things, and this is just a lovely product just to satisfy that market.
Excellent. Well, sounds like some really good tips there. And as you say, lots of things that we can all learn from these vegan practices. Chris, thank you very much for joining me.
It's a pleasure.
And I was talking there to Chris Thorne from Aylett's. Some really interesting ideas, though. I'd never even heard of vegan gardening, and yet, as I say, so much we can learn from it. And remember, we spoke to the Hearts of Middle Wessex Wildlife just a couple of weeks ago, and they were requesting that we incorporated a pond into our gardens. And I was thinking that would be a great help for vegan gardening as well, bringing in the hedgehogs and the amphibians that will act as natural pest controllers. So, yeah, I'm sure there's lots of things that we can use there. Now, perhaps the place is looking a little bit cleaner just at the moment because litter pickers have been busy all around St Albans joining the National Spring Clean. The Park Street Pickers had yet another very successful litter pick on Sunday, and Plastic Free St Albans got together with the Vare Valley Society to clean up the River Vare between Cotton Mill Lane over to the old railway in one direction and right into Verulamium Park the other way. Now, they did an audit of the litter that they found to see which brands were responsible for the most litter, and I was quite surprised to find out that Cadbury's came out on top, so do keep hold of those chocolate bar wrappers. They also showed me that there's a storm drain at the bottom of Hollywell Hill which empties straight into the river, and all of the plastic from in town on Hollywell Hill all accumulates on its way to the river there. So a real eye-opener that our litter that we drop on the land is ending up in the river, and of course then it gets washed out to cause problems in the sea. Now, do follow me on Twitter at @RV_environment. Please do like the Environment Matters Facebook page and drop me a line on amanda@radioverulam.com if you've got a comment about something you'd like us to cover. I'll be back at the same time next week. Until then, thank you for listening.
Environment Matters, sponsored by Wooka Period Pants, the reusable menstrual underwear that completely replaces disposables. Find out more at wooka.co.uk and join the revolution.